Iran's leader Ayatollah Khamenei says the United States and some European countries were overtly involved in the recent riots that were aimed at destroying Iran's strength. Israel's new far-right security minister recently stormed into Al-Aqsa Mosque, says that he has instructed police to remove Palestinian flags from public spaces. Brazilian police retake control of key government buildings, including Congress, that after they were overrun by supporters of far-right ex-president Jair Bolsonaro. Welcome to World News. Here in the Iranian capital, I'm your host, Behruz Najafi. Good to have you with us. Top story this hour, leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution says that the United States and Europe were overtly involved in the recent riots in Iran. Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei says that the enemies mainly push their agenda using cyberspace and other media outlets as propaganda tools. He said the media hype was aimed at creating the impression of public discontent with economic issues and shortcomings in other sectors. The leader noted, however, that they did not want weaknesses to go away. The aim, he said, was rather eliminating the country's points of strength. Ayatollah Khamenei stressed that what the rioters did amounted to treason. He pointed to a recent released document about an order by former U.S. President Jimmy Carter to topple the Islamic Republic just 10 months after its inception in 1979. Ayatollah Khamenei said that the U.S. used every means at its disposal, including propaganda, to achieve this goal, but it failed, as it did in the recent riots. Tehran has once again censured controversial French weekly Charlie Hebdo for publishing cartoons of the religious and political authorities in Iran as a clear example of preaching hate and inciting violence. Foreign Ministry spokesman said the cartoons insult Muslim sanctities and Iran's religious and national values. Nasser Kanani says that the caricatures are also an insult to women and published in a country that claims to champion their rights. The spokesman is also expressing regret that the French government has supported the cartoons rather than disassociating itself from the move. Iranians have held rallies in different cities over the past days to protest the move. The foreign ministry also summoned the French ambassador to protest the caricatures while closing a French cultural center in Iran. Now, we've asked political commentator Fuad Izzati why Charlie Hebdo easily insults other faiths despite the existence of hate speech laws in France, and here's what he had to say.
In France, we have hate speech laws in the books, and what the French government could do is just easily invoke those laws, prosecute the magazine. That's what they should do. What they do in practice is give... The French government gives this magazine financial support. They gave the magazine 1 million euros in 2015, and the current French president, Macron, has been supporting the magazine. And this is also not something that's required from the French president. We remember previous French officials used to criticize the behavior of this magazine. And in fact, the French government has banned the magazine 3 times in its history for violating hate speech laws. So what we see is basically the French engaging in hybrid warfare against Iran using the magazine.
The Palestinian Prime Minister says that Israel's recent sanctions on the Palestinian Authority are a new war aimed at pushing the body to the brink. In a cabinet meeting, Mohammed Shataya said that the Israeli regime intends to weaken Palestinians financially and institutionally. Israel's new right-wing cabinet on Friday announced that it would withhold millions of dollars in tax revenues from the Palestinian Authority, and that after Palestinians successfully lobbied for a UN General Assembly vote to refer Israel's occupation of their land to the International Court of Justice. Israel has suspended a VIP pass of Palestinian Foreign Minister Riyad al-Maliki that could hinder his travel in and around the occupied West Bank. And that's in response to Palestinians' bid to involve the International Court of Justice in their conflict with the Tel Aviv regime. Israeli forces confiscated al-Maliki's card while it was entering from Jordan. Israel's new right-wing cabinet has announced a series of measures after the UN General Assembly, responding to a Palestinian appeal, asked the ICJ for an opinion on the legal status of Israel's occupation of Palestine. The regime's measures include using Palestinian money to compensate Israelis killed or injured in Palestinian operations. It's also imposed a moratorium on Palestinian constructions. An Israeli minister who recently stormed into Al-Aqsa Mosque has also directed troops to remove Palestinian flags from public spaces. Adada, for a long-serving Palestinian prisoner, waved the flag while receiving the hero's welcome upon his release. Israel also revoked VIP cards of three senior Palestinian officials for paying a visit to the freed inmate. Now, during our news review program, we've discussed the confiscation of the Palestinian foreign minister's VIP pass by Israel and the regime's new restrictions.
Later, we're joined by our correspondent Mona Kanda, joining us live from Ramallah, and also Mahmeyar Abu Sada, professor of political science at the Al-Azhar University of Gaza City. Thank you very much to both of you for joining us. Now, let's begin with our correspondent, Mona. Could you please shed more light on the different aspects of this type of taking away the passes of Palestinian officials, and what effect does it have?
Well, to make it more clear, the occupied West Bank and West Bank cities are divided. If you want to move from the city of Ramallah to Jenin or to Nablus to Al-Khalil to any part of the occupied West Bank from a city to another, there are numerous Israeli military checkpoints with Israeli soldiers. They're checking the people. Sometimes they allow people to move freely. Other times, mainly between the big cities, they stop the Palestinian vehicles and they check their IDs. So Palestinian ministers and some senior officials in the Palestinian Authority, let's say, they have VIP pass card. It allows them to move, let's say, more easily inside the occupied West Bank and even around it. Around it means entering Al-Quds and entering the lands that were occupied in 1948. Now the Israeli regime decided to suspend the VIP pass card of Palestinian Foreign Minister Riyad Al-Maliki. Now he's not allowed, let's say, to enter Al-Quds or the lands occupied in 1948, even if the Israelis didn't mention this literally. And his movement inside the occupied West Bank would not be easy. He would be, dealt with as a normal Palestinian citizen. This move has been taken as part of a number of Israeli other moves have been taken by the Israeli regime in response to, a request by the Palestinians on December 31st. The UN General Assembly voted in favor of Palestinian request to seek an advisory opinion from the International Criminal Court on the nature of the Israeli occupation of the Palestinian territories, and this has angered the Israeli regime. Yet we expect more sanctions and punishments would be imposed by the Israeli regime on this Palestinian move.
Okay, so Mona, hold that thought, and I would like you to elaborate more on other measures that the Israeli regime can take in order to basically have a response to that move from the Palestinians. Now, let's bring in Professor Abu Sada. Professor, the measures that we see Israelis are taking, what kind of effect do you think they will have? In practical terms, what does this mean, revoking the passes of Palestinian officials?
Very good question. Many thanks for having me in this program. And let me start by saying that the new Israeli government, the new right-wing Israeli government, has started its job as a new government by declaring war on the Palestinians in many ways. One which we saw last week, on Tuesday of last week, the Minister of National Security in Israel stormed Al-Aqsa Mosque And now the Israeli cabinet has taken some severe measures against the Palestinian leadership. And one of them is the Minister of Foreign Affairs, Riyad al-Malki, and three other senior Palestinian officials who are member of the Fatah Central Committee and also holding top Palestinian positions. Let me also say that according to the Oslo Agreement, which was signed between Israel and the PLO back in September of 1993, Israel has divided the West Bank into three areas, A, B, and C. And to move from one area to the other area, from A to B or from A to C area, Palestinian officials need, as Mona has indicated, a VIP card to facilitate their movement in the occupied West Bank. And by suspending and revoking those VIP cards, those Palestinian officials will not be able to move freely between their place of residence and between their ministries, which are located in the city of Ramallah in the West Bank. But that's not the issue. The issue here is that the Israeli new right-wing government has decided to escalate the situation against the Palestinian leadership to try to put more pressure on the Palestinian leadership to stop its legal battle against Israel in the international community and also at the International Court of Justice, where the Palestinians are seeking justice from the court to issue an advisory resolution with regard to the ongoing Israeli occupation of Palestinian land, which has been going on for more than half a century now, since 1967. It seems to me that we are approaching some severe measures from Israel, which have been declared by the Israeli cabinet 2 days ago. And I believe that will not go without Palestinian retaliation.
Thank you very much. Our correspondent Mona Kandel, live from Ramallah, and also Mahmer Abu Sada, professor of political science from the Al-Azhar University in Gaza City. Thanks to both of you for sharing your thoughts and views with us on this edition of the News Review.
Now moving on, Brazil's Supreme Court has suspended the governor of capital Brasilia for 90 days, the day after three government buildings were stormed by supporters of far-right former president Jair Bolsonaro. The Supreme Court cited security flaws that allowed the invasion of the court building, as well as the presidential palace and Congress. The court also gave Bolsonaro supporters 24 hours to remove camps they set up outside military bases. Hundreds of the ex-president's supporters have been arrested in the aftermath of Sunday attacks. Bolsonaro has condemned the attack, but he's being blamed for triggering it by disputing the outcome of the October presidential vote, which he lost to Luiz Inácio Lula da Silva. The incumbent now says that those who invaded the government buildings are fanatical fascists.
Like true vandals destroying what they found in front of them. We think there was a lack of security, and I wanted to tell you that all those people who did this will be found and punished. And these people, these vandals, what could we say, are fanatical Nazis, fanatical fascists, did what has never been done in this country.
Lula, who took office just over a week ago, declared a federal security intervention to restore law and order in the capital. The raid in the government buildings has drawn a chorus of condemnation from world leaders, including from several South American countries, the UK, Germany, and China. Our correspondent in Sao Paulo, Camila Escalante, says that police in Brazil have been accused of aiding protesters during the course of the recent unrest in the country.
President Lula, as well as the president of the Workers' Party right away, said that the Brasilia District Police failed to do their job. They failed to dismantle these so-called protests or riots that were taking place. In some cases, the police officers were seen and photographed speaking to, chatting with the rioters, taking selfies, taking photos with them. And some people reported, some people who actually participated in the destruction of these buildings said that the police were actually aiding them. But after the announcements were made on social media, a little bit of action began to be taken. Some arrests have been made, of course. At this hour, they say 300 arrests have been made, but that's because of the federal intervention. Lula came on television from where he was here in a town in the interior of Sao Paulo. He had been visiting that town because of heavy rains and destruction, which had led to several deaths there. So he was not in the capital today. And he decreed federal intervention in Brasilia, which means that the military is able to go and deal with the rioters and what they call terrorism and insurrection by fascists there. And so what also might come of this is the dismantling of some of the camps where these people have been supposedly protesting.
Russia is slamming France and other Western states for the recent decisions to ramp up military support for Kiev, warning that such measures could deepen the suffering of Ukrainians. The Kremlin spokesman reiterated that Western armed deliveries cannot and will not change anything on the ground. Dmitry Peskov says that such moves would not deter Russia from achieving its goals. Last week, France and Germany announced they would send light combat vehicles, including tanks, to Kiev to help it fight Russia. Ukraine, which has scored some battlefield successes in recent months, had asked its Western backers for heavier weaponry. Moscow, however, has time and again warned that Western leaders are prolonging the conflict by providing weapons to Ukraine. A report shows that well over 70% of German companies believe the outlook for business is bleak for 2023. The survey by the German Economic Institute indicates that 4 out of 10 firms expecting their businesses to decline this year. And that amid high energy costs, supply chain issues, and the continuing war in Ukraine. The survey also shows around a third of companies expect output to stagnate. The findings also show the risk of gas shortage remains high and production disruptions cannot be ruled out. The International Monetary Fund has also forecast the German economy to shrink by 0.3% next year, mainly due to a halt in gas flow from Russia amid the war in Ukraine. That's a wrap for this news bulletin. Goodbye.
Fruitful Moments with IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
In the limelight. Republican Kevin McCarthy finally succeeded on the 15th vote to become Speaker of the U.S. House of Representatives, but he had to make numerous concessions along the way. We take a look at the U.S. media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. The Los Angeles Times tells us more. Representative Kevin McCarthy, Republican of Bakersfield, was elected Speaker of the House early on Saturday morning, 7th of January, after 4 days and 15 ballots, resuscitating a chamber that had been paralyzed as it endured the longest struggle to elect a leader since before the Civil War. That was easy, huh? McCarthy joked after receiving the Speaker's gavel from House Minority Leader Hakeem Jeffries. I hope one thing's clear after this week, he said. I never give up. McCarthy's long-delayed triumph marks the high point of a congressional career he began as a staffer for former Representative Bill Thomas more than 3 decades ago. But the Republican leader's victory came at a price. In order to secure the votes required to succeed his fellow Californian Nancy Pelosi, Democrat of San Francisco, as the Speaker, McCarthy had to agree to a series of compromises that dramatically weaken the power of the post. The deals McCarthy struck with a group of fewer than 24 hardline Republicans will empower the far right of the Republican Party ahead of a congressional term that promises contentious battles over funding the federal government and increasing the debt ceiling. And so one of the strongest House Speakers in America's history is succeeded by what is likely to be one of the weakest, presidential historian Michael Beschloss tweeted early on Saturday, 7th of January. Before finally securing the gavel, McCarthy lost his 14th ballot for Speaker on Friday evening in the most dramatic fashion possible, falling by a single vote, shy of the outright majority he needed. After Lauren Boebert of Colorado and Matt Gaetz of Florida voted present, McCarthy tallied 216 of 432 votes. Matt Gaetz, who missed his name when it was first called, became the decisive vote to determine whether McCarthy would become Speaker or continue his historic losing streak. McCarthy and other Republicans approached Gaetz after his vote, seemingly pleading with him to change it and end the speakership fight. But Gaetz remained unmoved and the vote closed without electing a speaker. Mike Rogers, Republican of Alaska, was restrained by a colleague after approaching Gaetz. At one point, Marjorie Taylor Greene tried to hand Matt Rosendale her cell phone. Former President Donald Trump was calling, but Rosendale waved her off. House Republicans had moved to adjourn until Monday afternoon after the 14th stunning defeat, but ultimately opposed their own motion and chanted for one more vote. The nature of McCarthy's final bargain was not immediately apparent, but the rules package House Republicans hope to pass next week will reportedly allow a single member to force a vote to oust the Speaker of the House. McCarthy's victory came on the 15th Speaker ballot. The chamber had adjourned Friday afternoon until 10 p.m. to allow two McCarthy supporters to return to Washington to get him over the top. McCarthy had flipped 15 votes his way earlier on Friday, nearly enough to clinch the Speaker's gavel on the 13th ballot. Six hard-right Republicans had positioned themselves for months as hard no votes against McCarthy. Some sent fundraising emails this week highlighting their opposition to the GOP leader. Although they stayed true to their word, refusing to vote for Kevin McCarthy even on the final ballot, they ultimately cleared the way for him by voting present. President Joe Biden congratulated Kevin McCarthy on his election and said he was prepared to work with the Republicans. Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer, Democrat of New York, took a very different approach. Speaker Kevin McCarthy's dream job could turn into a nightmare for the American people, Chuck Schumer said in a statement. to get the votes, he surrendered to demands of a fringe element of the Republican Party. Kevin McCarthy's concessions to the extremists in his party make it far more likely that the MAGA Republican-controlled House will cause a government shutdown or a default with devastating consequences to the country. CBS News has also covered the same story and tells us more. After a stunning turn of events on Friday night that forced a 15th ballot in the race for House Speaker, Representative Kevin McCarthy, the Republican leader, finally secured enough votes shortly after midnight to become Speaker of the House. His victory followed 4 hours of voting and persistent negotiations with far-right members of the Republican Conference, who kept the win at bay until the 15th round of voting. The selection of a speaker finally paved the way for those elected in November to take their oaths of office and the House to organize. The chamber is set to vote on Monday, 9th of January, to adopt a rules package governing the 118th Congress, which includes some of the concessions made by Kevin McCarthy in talks with conservative holdouts. McCarthy won 216 votes to 212, convincing enough for his GOP colleagues who had voted against him to support his bid. The 6 remaining Republicans who withheld their support for Kevin McCarthy up to the final ballot, Andy Biggs of Arizona, Lauren Boebert of Colorado, Eli Crane of Arizona, Matt Gaetz of Florida, Bob Good of Virginia, and Matt Rosendale of Montana, all voted present. Therefore, the Honorable Kevin McCarthy of the state of California, having received the majority of the votes cast, is duly elected Speaker of the House of Representatives, House Clerk Cheryl Johnson declared at 12:38 a.m. as she read the final vote count. A victory for McCarthy on Friday night had suddenly seemed out of reach after he lost the 14th round by a single vote. Matt Gaetz voted present at the last minute and McCarthy needed his vote. Gaetz's vote angered some of his colleagues, including GOP Representative Mike Rogers, who was physically restrained from charging Gaetz by Representative Richard Hudson. The move by Gaetz and McCarthy's failure to claim the gavel again left the chamber on the cusp of adjournment for the weekend, with Patrick McHenry of North Carolina offering a motion to halt the proceedings for the day and adjourn. But just as Republicans appeared to have enough votes to do so, commotion ensued on the floor of the House and Republicans rushed to change their votes to hold another round. McCarthy told his GOP colleagues to take their seats for one more time. The 15th ballot proved to seal the win for McCarthy.
The Gate of Knowledge. Exegesis and interpretations of the supremely eloquent sermons, letters, and sayings of the Commander of the Faithful, Imam Ali ibn Abi Talib, peace be upon him.
You're listening to the program Gate of Knowledge on IRIB English Radio with Sheikh Mukhtar, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Qom.
A'udhu billahi minash shaitanir rajim. Bismillahir rahmanir rahim. Alhamdulillahi rabbil alamin. والصلاة والسلام على سيدنا محمد وعلى أهل بيته الطيبين الطاهرين. Dear listeners to IRIB English Radio, Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. I welcome you all to this episode of The Gate of Knowledge, where we are discussing about the topic of prophethood based on the teachings of Imam Ali alayhi salam in Nahjul Balagha. We are currently focusing on the 192nd sermon that talks about the fact that the prophets and messengers were not proud, they were humble, and they lowered themselves and they understood the difficulties and problems of the lower class of the society. Rather, their lifestyle was the lifestyle of the people who are the mustadhaf, the weak group of the people, the weak lot of the society. And this is one of those things that the prophets had, so that they can actually feel the problems of the people, and that the people feel that they are part of the prophetic movement, and that the prophets understand their difficulties and problems. And of course, there are many other reasons why this is the case. And we say that, of course, that doesn't mean that the prophets and messengers did not originate, for example, or did not live in the early onset of their lives or in the starting phases of their lives in the higher classes of the society. It doesn't contradict with that. Rather, it is their lifestyle that is important as prophets and messengers, that they lowered themselves, they brought themselves to the capacity that they, lived the life of those who are in need. Inshallah, we will explain more in the coming segment.
You are listening to the program Gate of Knowledge on IRIB English Radio, a program that presents a detailed commentary of Peak of Eloquence from the Master of the Faithful, Imam Ali, peace be upon him.
Now, we were trying to understand the statement of Imam Ali alayhi salam, where he says that the prophets وَكَانُوا أَقْوَامًا مُسْتَضْعَفِينَ, that they were people who are, you can say, مُسْتَضْعَف, or they wore the garb of the weaker class of the society. They were they lowered themselves to be with the weaker group, the lower class of the society. Now, when we see this, and then we see that we gave examples in the previous session as to some of the messengers and some of the prophets having originated from the higher class. For example, Nabi Musa alayhi salam. We see that Nabi Musa alayhi salam, while he was a prophet, he was still a prince in the house of Fir'aun. We see that he is a prince in the house of Fir'aun, but he is getting followers, he's gathering followers. We see that. For example, we see that Nabi Musa alayhi salam is gathering a follower. The wife of Fir'aun becomes his follower. So we notice that the revolutionary spirit is there in him, even in that level. So we understand that, you see, at this stage even, the prophet is looking for followers, the prophet is doing his prophetic message. What does that tell us? That tells us that the prophets and the messengers, though may have originated from these levels or these higher class of the societies, higher classes of the societies, but their hearts, inside their hearts, they lived a lower level of life than what was expected from a prince. Yes, you could see that they were, or the way they eat could be somehow similar, not completely similar, of course, but that appearance should not make you feel confused and misguide you from the idea that the messengers understood the needs and the requirements of the people. And therefore, you notice that this same Nabi Musa alayhi salam, when Fir'aun comes to know about his intentions, he pushes away Musa alayhi salam from his castle, from his palace, and Nabi Musa alayhi salam goes into the desert. He goes to do his duty, and you see that in that stage, Nabi Musa alayhi salam is living like the lower class of the society. He's living a very simple lifestyle, such that they say that Nabi Musa alayhi salam was so much used to eating the herbs of the earth that his belly was green in color. So, I mean, this is kind of a metaphor probably, but it is referring to the fact of that simplistic lifestyle that Nabi Musa alayhi salam had, of course, as a messenger, and that attitude that he carried with himself as a prophet of God.
Stay tuned to the IRIB English Radio.
Now, we are trying to understand the fact that these messengers, when we say that the messengers of God lived the life of the mustadhafin or the lower class of the society, that doesn't contradict with the fact that they could have originated from the higher classes. But what it now entails is that the messengers, their hearts and their minds were attuned to the needs of the people. And they were not attached to that lifestyle of the higher class. They lived that revolutionary life, the life of a revolutionary, amongst the people. Though that origin could be there, but that crux and the reality of their lifestyle was that. And that's why we see that they were so easily able to leave everything and sacrifice all that wealth, but live a life of the simple people and share their pain and share their suffering. This actually is trying to, this statement that we brought about is trying to negate that idea that is there in some social determinists, especially Marxists and socialists, who say that all revolutionaries and all revolutions started from people that were of the lower class, and that they had to be living a lower class to be able to bring about a revolution in the society. This is not true. Look at the lives of Nabi Musa alayhi salam. Look at the life of the Prophet. This means that the actual engine that drives a revolution is understanding those ideals of who a human being has to be and what he needs to become. If a human being is able to understand what a human being has to be and what his purpose is, then that human is enough to bring about the change that is required in that society. But to define things that happen in this society in material terms is a mistake. And these examples are clear. Direction to show us that. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
That was Sheikh Mukhtar, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Rome, on the program Gate of Knowledge on IRIB English Radio.
وبالكتاب مسدد والنور معنا باب العلوم ومرشد هو آيات الله من نداه أو لبه حين دعاه نال منه هو في الشدائد مجيد والفضل يمنى هو في المحاسن أحمد والوحي ربا.
When the whole world is silent towards oppression, even one voice becomes powerful. IRIB English Radio, the voice of the voiceless. Our internet address is parstoday.ir/en. In the limelight.
In Britain, some experts have warned the National Health Service is already heading for a two-tier system. We take a look at the British media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. British newspaper The Observer has covered the story. NHS trusts with record waiting lists are promoting quick and easy private healthcare services at their own hospitals, offering patients the chance to jump year-long queues, The Observer can reveal. Hospitals are offering hip replacements from £10,000, cataract surgery for £2,200, and hernia repairs for £2,500. Magnetic resonance imaging or MRI scans are offered for between £300 and £400. This comes as figures show a record 7.2 million people are waiting for NHS treatment in England, with routine breaches of the maximum waiting time of 18 weeks for non-urgent referrals. Health experts warn of the risk of creating a two-tier healthcare system. An Observer investigation has found East Sussex Healthcare NHS Trust has thousands of patients waiting for diagnostic tests but offers fast access to scans through its private division. Great Western Hospitals NHS Trust in Wiltshire is warning patients that services are extremely busy, while its private division promotes self-pay treatment for those who don't want to wait for an NHS referral. James Paget University Hospital NHS Trust in Norfolk is advertising private services on its NHS website, stating, "We provide highly experienced consultant-led services without the waiting list. The premium treatments are being offered through private patient units owned and operated by NHS Trust and typically located on hospital premises. Procedures are often carried out by the same staff who would eventually treat patients if they stayed on the NHS waiting list. Under a code of conduct, private services cannot impact on NHS patient care, and profits go back into the health service." It comes as the Sunday Times reported thousands of NHS patients will be moved urgently into care homes and under government plans to ease pressure on accident and emergency wards. An emergency winter pressure package would be unveiled by the Health Secretary Steve Barclay this week that would include a hospital discharge fund, while the final package was still being negotiated at No. 10 Downing Street. Senior government sources said it would involve spending hundreds of millions of pounds on top of the £500 million in social care funding announced in the autumn statement, the report said. At Sussex Premier Health, part of East Sussex Healthcare NHS Trust, MRI scans are carried out within 48 hours for £379, according to a recent Instagram promotion. The Trust has more than 7,800 patients waiting for diagnostic tests. Great Western Hospital's NHS Trust in Wiltshire offers private healthcare through a 20-bed unit, the Shelbourne Suite. The private patient website says, "We believe quality healthcare should be readily accessible. A woman whose elderly mother was treated by the trust in October claims she was told she could bypass long waiting lists if she paid. My 86-year-old mother will have to wait 2 years on the NHS waiting list or can see the same surgeon in the same hospital and be treated in just 2 weeks' time for £1,200. How is this right? She wrote on Twitter. Another trust, Hampshire Hospital NHS Trust, is promoting services through its private Candover Clinic. More than 53,500 patients were waiting for non-urgent elective treatment at the trust in October. Meanwhile, Kingston Private Health, the private unit at Kingston Hospital NHS Trust in southwest London, offered rapid access with no waiting lists. Treatments include hip replacement surgery for £10,100. Patients are cared for by experienced NHS nursing staff. The Royal Free London NHS Foundation Trust writes on its website for its private division of a quick and easy way to get immediate access to the healthcare you need. Under the Health and Social Care Act 2012, NHS hospital trusts were permitted to generate up to 49% of their income from private patients. By 2015-2016, nearly £600 million a year was being generated by the NHS treating private patients. The pandemic and record waiting lists led to a review of private services by some NHS trusts. King's College Hospital NHS Trust in South London stood down inpatient and outpatient private services during the coronavirus pandemic to allow the inpatient beds to be used for NHS patients. The inpatient service has yet to reopen. Independent has also covered the same story. The National Health Service across the United Kingdom is already facing a two-tier system by stealth, an expert has warned, following leaks of Scottish health policy plans. A two-tier healthcare system is already developing across the United Kingdom, think tank the Institute of Public Policy Research, IPPR, has said, as waiting lists push patients towards more paid for care. The comments come following reports by the BBC revealing NHS leaders in Scotland have discussed creating a two-tier healthcare system amid concerns over the sustainability of healthcare services in the country. Chris Thomas, head of the Commission on Health and Prosperity for the Institute of Public Policy Research, IPPR, told The Independent, "Even beyond it becoming formal policy, we have a two-tier system. We are worried that that's happening anyway across the United Kingdom." He pointed to the Institute for Public Policy Research earlier this year, which found despite a universal support from political parties and public for the founding principles for the National Health Service that is free, comprehensive and tax-funded, there was a growing movement to opt out from NHS services, where patients face long waiting lists, waiting times or access issues. Earlier this year, for example, Private Hospital Information Network estimated the number of people paying out of their own resources for hip replacement surgery or hip operations between 2019 and 2022 has increased by 193%. Mr. Thomas said he was concerned the NHS across the United Kingdom was heading for the equivalent of the English education system, or at worst, a similar structure to dentistry or social care, where he warned was very much a two-tier system. However, he added, "I think it's probably a symptom of the underfunding, I think, rather than something that feels imminent or particularly on the table. But if funding is low, if the NHS is struggling for long periods of time to provide universal healthcare needs, options end up on the table. My biggest fear, if the NHS was to become really, really conditional on their ability to pay, the coalition that supports it, the political capital it has, is dependent on it being one of the most universal healthcare services that we have. I'd be really nervous if it became more like Social Security, which only benefits a small number of people. According to reports from the BBC, minutes from a meeting with high-ranking health officials were given the green light by NHS Scotland Chief Caroline Lamb to discuss reform of a service which finds itself in crisis. One of the suggestions, according to the report, would result in a two-tier healthcare system where some people would pay for healthcare. Other suggestions include changing the risk appetite from what we see in hospitals by setting a target of discharging patients for their home for treatment within 23 hours. Leaders also considered a review of the cost of long-term prescribing of drugs, pausing the funding of new drugs, applying a charge for freedom of information requests, and sending patients home for care, according to the document, while saying there was a £1 billion hole in their NHS services finances.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1520 to 1620 UTC on the following frequencies. 31 meters, 9,650 kilohertz for the Indian subcontinent, and FM 91.5 MHz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and Iran Sat or Bat 5, and via the Internet. Our Internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
Every night and every day, every night and every day, never forget to say, La ilaha illallah, never forget to say, La ilaha illallah.
IRIB English Radio, a herald of unity and solidarity amongst Islamic denominations.
Oh Lord, here I am, pleading at your door. Send me your mercy, send me your peace, or I am lost for sure.
Hadith of the day.
Here I am, yearning for your cure. This humble servant will be diverted from you no more, no more, no more.
You're listening to the program Hadith of the Day with Dr. Shiraz Hossein Agha on IRIB English Radio.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Welcome to our program Hadith of the Day here at IRIB English Radio. Today on Hadith of the Day, we are going to be looking at a very beautiful and noble hadith which has been narrated from Imam Al-Baqir alayhi salam. This beautiful hadith is about those sins, the punishment of which is hastened in the life of this world. As you know, every sin, you know, is deserving of punishment. It's up to God to forgive that person who has committed that sin or not. And depending on the nature of the sin, you know, if the person has committed repentance or not, has performed repentance, or he has not performed repentance, and also the gravity of the sin, as well as whether it is a sin that has social repercussions or no. It's one of those sins that is not connected to the rights of other people. It's one of the acts in which the servant has trampled upon God's right. You know, all of this is something that should be analyzed in its own place. There are sins which the punishment of which, however, is hastened in the life of this world. Right? What are those sins? In this beautiful hadith, Imam Baqir alayhi salam, he explains them. Imam Baqir said that the following is written in the book of Imam Ali. Just by way of parentheses, we can say that it's very famous that the commander of the faithful, Imam Ali alayhi salam, during the life of the Holy Prophet, whenever revelation was revealed, Imam Ali alayhi salam, he would write certain things down regarding the verses which were revealed. Like, for example, when it was revealed, under what circumstances it was revealed, when it was revealed, he would write something about the meaning of the verse, the interpretation of the verse, and other things as well surrounding the verses that were revealed. And he did not get time to collect all of this information together in one place. After the demise of the Holy Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam, it's famous that the commander of the faithful, he set a time aside, and he did this, and he gathered this together, and this book became famous as the Book of Ali, or the Book of Imam Ali alayhi salam. And you know, he offered to present this book to the Islamic society, to the masses, but unfortunately, for some reasons, we don't have time to get into. The people weren't ready, for this book, and so he kept it to himself. This book was passed down from one imam, alayhi salam, to the other, to the succeeding and subsequent imam, and this is one of those sources of the knowledge of the Aimma alayhi salam. In any case, Imam Baqir alayhi salam says that in the Book of Ali alayhi salam, this following was written: the perpetrator of any of the following three misdeeds will not die before seeing their evil consequences in this world. They are intimidation of others, cutting off, that's the first one, second, cutting off one's blood relations, two, and taking false oaths, meaning falsely swearing and making an oath, which is false. Thank you for joining us here on Hadith of the Day. We were looking at sins that hasten punishment in the life of this world, in the words of Muhammad, Imam Muhammad al-Baqir alayhi salam. Until next time, wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
That was Dr. Shiraz Hossein Agha for the program Hadith of the Day on RIB English Radio.
اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد اللهم صل على محمد وآل